as we normally do, without fail. We are continuing with our work of public hearing on the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill, Bill number 7 of 2020, no more 19s. Any apology, Valerie?
Yes, Chairperson, Solichung is available this week to organizational business. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, loud and clear.
Mr. Sitole is leaving at 10 because of oversight. Mr. Yabo is not available because he's attending the higher education meeting.
Where's the oversight happening for Honorable Stroller?
Cape Town, Chairperson, Cape Town.
Okay. Thank you very much. without any further ado, Honorable Members, I think you have the program in front of you. Let me start by indicating that in between the submissions, we'll have around 15 minutes for discussions. So members should cut their questions to the bone so that we can accommodate everybody and accommodate responses. Otherwise, we are good to go. The first submission of the day in this August House of the Subcommittee on Transport Portfolio Committee is by a company called AgBees. I have already seen Mr. Theo Boshoff is with us here. Can you please forge ahead, sir? You are warmly welcomed in this meeting, and thanks for making time to come and talk to us. We are ready to receive this morning, so that as we move forward, we take serious consideration of your submissions. Thank you very much. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And good morning again to all the honorable members and esteemed guests. And thank you very much for the opportunity to be able to present to you today. I will just quickly try to share my screen since I have prepared a presentation. I hope it's visible.
No, you are visible, not your screen.
Is the presentation visible?
There, it's coming. It has arrived. Thank you very much. We now can see the presentation. Forge ahead, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So, yes, my name is Theo Bosser. So I'm the head of legal at AgBiz. AgBiz is an industry association called the Agricultural Business Chamber. So it is a chamber of agricultural businesses whom we represent. And so AgBiz, generally speaking, represents the agricultural value chain. Everyone from the input suppliers, such as feed and fertilizer manufacturers, primary producers, agro-processors, and of course, off-takers as well. It's the whole value chain around agriculture. But today our interest, I think, specifically is also to support our colleagues in the wine industry with their detailed submissions. There's just a quick snapshot of our membership, of which, of course, the wine industry also does feature strongly. Unfortunately, I don't have any wine to share today. That is my only regret for the morning.
Yeah.
It would have been good.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
But Chairperson, so we're broadly supportive of all the provisions of the bill, and our focus is only on one specific provision, which we'd like to draw to the committee's attention, and that's proposal to amend Section 65, the blood alcohol limit to 0%. So our presentation will be wholly focused on that, looking at the objective, which we support, in the link between the proposal, so the means to achieve the objective, which I think we will focus on, and which we do question whether or not it is the right way to go, potential unintended consequences, the effect on the agribusiness industry, and then, of course, alternative considerations, which we'd like to also propose to the committee for your deliberations. So, Chairperson, the objective to improve road safety, I think, cannot be faulted. That's the first thing I must say outright. So the statistics, I think, are rather frightening. According to the Road Traffic Management Corporation and UNISA study, in 2012 alone, I know the numbers have increased since then. It's been roughly 17,500 fatalities on the road each year. And 27.1% of those, they attributed directly to alcohol consumption, which also in the study that is mentioned was perhaps an underestimation. So again, the 27.1%, I think, is rounded up to the 28% in terms of intoxication that they found. Non-fatal injuries, roughly 50%, did show some sign of alcohol in the blood, and 60 to 63% of the fatal injuries did also show some indication of alcohol to the blood. So, Chairperson, again, the objective of the bill, to improve road safety and to prevent driving under the influence, cannot be faulted. Our only query is whether or not the means imposed, so changing the limit from 0.05% to 0%, will in fact achieve that that objective. So when looking at this, we did some research. So the blood alcohol limit was reduced, in fact, from, I think, 0.08% to 0.05% in 1996, the previous reduction, but the road deaths still increased during this period. So it increased from just over 10,000 in 1996 when the amendment was made to 17,500 in 2017. There are, of course, other factors also at play. There are more cars on the road, which stated simply means there will be more traffic accidents. But unfortunately, it didn't seem, decreasing the limit previously didn't seem to make a very real impact on the scourge of driving under the influence, which I think is something to consider. A very interesting statistic that also came out of this research study that was done by UNISA and the Road Traffic Management Corporation is that more than 58% of the driver fatalities tested positive for alcohol. However, the mean level, so the level that was most often encountered, was 0.18 grams per 100 milliliters. The implication there is that the most drivers that were unfortunately involved in these road traffic incidents were well over the existing limits as well. In other words, they formulated that criminal intent, and the 0.05% didn't seem to be much of a deterrent, as they're already way over the limit. So the question that we do pose is, will changing the limit make the biggest difference, or perhaps will changing the consequence, providing for a minimum sentence or some sort of harsher punishment, would that not perhaps be more of a deterrent value, if you look at it? Other statistics that I think were quite interesting is roughly a third of the road fatalities, so 5,359, again measured in 2017, were from pedestrians, where pedestrians were involved. So I think that once again brings in the issue, and alcohol was very prominently, did feature in a lot of those road fatalities. Of course, the amendment only speaks to driving under the influence, so it won't be able to necessarily address that that challenge of pedestrians involved in road accidents as well. So the question is, moving to a 0% blood alcohol limit, it will be symbolic. And the advantages of that, I think, would certainly be that there can be no doubt in terms of when one is over the limit, when one is not over the limit, as it's quite clear, any alcohol in the blood would be, is not allowed. And it would be a symbolic move. However, the question is there sufficient evidence to suggest that it will in fact yield results, that they will in fact lead to safer roads and less drivers under the influence on the road? And I think that's the essential question which one does deal with. So the object, I think, is certainly supported to try and improve the safety of our roads. Only question is whether or not this specific step versus alternatives would be the most efficient way to achieve that. From a legal point of view, some unintended consequences that we also encountered is that there is a possibility of so-called false negatives. So some prescription medication, especially certain cough syrups, does contain a trace of alcohol. Not enough, of course, not a medical practitioner, but from the research I've conducted, it seems that it's not enough to necessarily impair your judgment, either it will show up, if it's a trace of alcohol might just show up in the blood if you've taken some prescription medication. So that might in fact be criminalizing someone, which shouldn't be the intent of the legislation, who hasn't consumed alcohol intentionally. It was just prescription medication. There's also a condition, I think a very medical condition, called endogenous ethanol fermentation, where certain people who have this condition, if they ingest any food products containing yeast, certain bread rolls or hot cross buns, it might for a short period of time show this, a false indication, as well as if there's alcohol in the blood, where that's not necessarily the case. It's only due to this medical condition. So when it does come to enforcement and both at the policing level, the breathalyzers, as well as later on testing it in court and obtaining a conviction, there is this possibility that there might be other factors that impacts, that can impact on a person and show a false, a false amount of alcohol in the blood, which don't believe is the intention of the legislation. Another thing that we did also consider is it may result in more arrests. I mean, but will it necessarily improve the conviction rate? And there, once again, I think some of the alternatives one can look at is to make it a priority crime and to designate a specific prosecuting unit to ensure that there is actually this follow-through between an arrest made or identified at a roadblock and actually following it through and making sure that that penalty is applied. The other aspect, of course, is it does bring, might bring South Africa out of line with the international norms. So we included some examples here, but the international norm generally raises between 0.02 to 0.08, with the mean being mostly 0.05. What is quite interesting as well is that there are a number of wine-producing countries on the list, like South Africa, of course, such as Chile, New Zealand, Spain, Portugal, United States, of course, and it does seem to be that their legislation was more or less in line with the current legislation. It doesn't seem like any of them that we could identify had the 0.00 blood alcohol limit. So it would, in fact, I think, so the weight of international legislation does seem to indicate that the current legislation is in line with international norms. So more specifically for our presentation, I note that there will be detailed presentations by the wine industry later today, and they will probably be able to delve into many of these factors into more detail. But our overall concern is really just the unintended consequences on the wine and liquor industry. And I mention those unintended consequences because the explicit intention to prevent driving under the influence, I think, is very sound and laudable. However, one always has to look at the unintended consequences as well. So the wine and liquor industry, they do play a very unique role in South Africa's economy. So it's one of South Africa's leading agricultural exports and earners of foreign revenue, which at this time I believe is quite important. It employs approximately 30,000 people directly, but many more through the wine-related tourism. And I'm sure the colleagues that present today will provide more detail. Wine tourism, of course, is a unique feature of South African tourism that no other African country can necessarily match. And it's a predominantly rural industry. So in other words, it is the lifeblood of several small, predominantly agricultural towns. So the direct impact of the following developments, I think, must also be taken into consideration with this amendment. There was a 16.1% increase in the national minimum wage for farm workers. So whilst that will hopefully increase the living standard of farm workers, it is a cost that the industry has to absorb. And the COVID-19 lockdown, as well as three successive prohibitions, of course, did have a very, very severe and direct impact on the wine industry. So our overall concern is really that there might be this brewing of a perfect storm where it's the industry is still recovering from the COVID-19 bans, has had quite a big increase in one of the cost factors, and now does face the possibility of reduced wine tourism, especially in some of the more rural areas. So wine tastings and restaurant sales is quite key for the wine industry, and the impact of a 0% blood alcohol limit, I think, has to be factored into that. The challenge, and I'm sure, again, the colleagues will expand on this more, but some of the more rural wine areas, there might not necessarily be Ubers or meter taxis available in some of these remote wine growing regions. So other arrangements for those responsible tourists will have to be made. It is an industry that's socially aware, and I think it can make a positive contribution to the road safety and fighting the social ills associated with alcohol abuse, and especially alcohol abuse and getting behind the wheel. So we do urge the committee to please consider some of the proposals, specific proposals, and how the industry can play a role in being part of the solution and not part of the problem when it comes to driving and influence. So just expanding a little bit on the impact of the COVID-19 restrictions, and I think it's necessary to do so because the information from StatsSA was recently released, and agriculture as a whole, the agricultural sector was very blessed in terms of that they had a very good, actually had a very successful year in 2020, but this might mask the impact that it had on specific subsectors, such as the wine industry. So agriculture as a whole performed very well, with the gross value added according to StatsSA was 13.1%. So the sector as a whole grew by 13.1% last year, whilst the economy shrunk by approximately 7%. Which means that it is a vitally important industry. But this was predominantly driven by other commodities. So we're the largest ever citrus export, which I think is very, very good, and the second largest ever grains harvest. But this was mostly predominantly as a result of two factors. Very favorable weather conditions, both in the winter and summer rain areas, as well as the fact that many of the businesses, the majority of agricultural companies, were permitted to operate as essential services. However, this doesn't necessarily apply to all of them. And we can show you quick, just very briefly, our outline made by the Bureau for Food and Agricultural Policy, showing the impact of the COVID-19 lockdowns in the various industries. So grains, to a large extent, were unaffected. They were able to operate very well, with the exception of barley, of course, because there was reduced demand due to the alcohol prohibitions. The livestock industry, also were able to, aside from the initial lockdown where wool, mowing, animal skins that are not food products weren't allowed to operate, that was soon rectified and the majority of the animal products were allowed to operate. The only real detriment, I think, to them was the reduction in demand, especially for beef and chicken because of the restaurant industry wasn't fully open. But overall, they were still permitted to operate. Where it really comes in, I think where the impact really comes in, and this is where the overall good picture for agriculture does mask the impact that COVID had on the wine industry, was with horticulture. Statuses and tomatoes, I know, suffered a little bit because they didn't have, with fast food outlets closed, there was reduced demand, but the fruit industry did very well, with the exception of wine grapes, and that's where that big red block came in, with the impact of three successive prohibitions on the sale of alcohol. So overall, whilst the agricultural sector did do well, the wine industry is perhaps in a different position. It's an exception. And we believe that this amendment, coupled with the raise in the national minimum wage, might in fact place even more pressure on a vitally important industry. So some potential alternatives to consider, because we looked at some of the challenges. And the challenges I mentioned is that those who currently exceed the limit, they have criminal intent, as we mentioned, that mean of 0.18%. That means the majority of road accidents are caused by people who are already breaking the law. So will a change in the limit necessary to serve as a deterrent? Perhaps not. However, increasing a minimum sentence or introducing a minimum sentence for driving under the influence can perhaps be more of a deterrent, have more value as a deterrent. A minimum sentence, we know that there is already a legal framework in South Africa for that, especially for some of the priority crimes. And the scourge of gender-based violence is probably the next one that will be treated in a similar matter, where there will be minimum sentences prescribed for gender-based violence or perpetrators of that. The same argument, I think, can be made for driving under the influence, because it is a huge, huge challenge in South Africa. However, we just believe that greater punishment might be more of a deterrent value than changing the limit, because those, as the research indicates, the majority of those people involved in accidents are already over the current legal limit. So traffic incidents associated with the alcohol disproportionately affects the youth. And the World Health Organization also did mention that South Africa is in line with international, it is unfortunately an international challenge where the youth is disproportionately affected and involved in road incidents related to alcohol. So a potential alternative is to reserve the 0% BAC for drivers who are either below the age of 21 or perhaps who are within the first 3 or 5 years of obtaining their license. It might either be easier to couple it for enforcement, couple it to a specific age versus how long one has had their license. But this has actually been reported, certain countries where they tried it, it had a success rate in reducing alcohol-related traffic incidents by between 4 and 24% globally. So this is another alternative we need to consider. The enforcement challenge, I think that is certainly a challenge. So a dedicated and direct policing, as well as perhaps also dedicated prosecuting units to ensure that driving under the influence charges don't get lost in the court roll, but in fact that they are prioritized and there's a dedicated prosecuting unit to ensure that deterrent value is there. And of course, the unintended consequences for the wine and liquor industry. The industry is represented here today, so we would just once again motivate that the industry should be part of the solution, and that we believe MPs should engage meaningfully with them to find solutions or a social compact to try and address these issues. Chairperson, so in conclusion, I think we cannot overemphasize how important of an aspect this is for South Africa. Driving under the influence, it's an immense social concern and immense cost to the economy as well. But there are legitimate concerns about the ability of this amendment to make a lasting difference versus some of the other alternative proposals that we would encourage the committee to also consider. If the amendment is merely symbolic, and we believe it will be a symbolic amendment, however, it still requires that it has to have the ability to make a difference, to yield specific results. So my question is, of course, having a look at the alternatives, perhaps there are alternative ways that this challenge can be tackled. And just lastly, I want to emphasize it's never a question of profit versus people. I mean, saving lives and improving road safety, that is vitally, vitally important. So it's no case of weighing up the monetary considerations from the industry, the profit considerations for the industry versus safety. It should never be a conflict. It should always be complementary. The real crux is just whether or not this amendment can, in fact, achieve its purpose, and that's why we would like to just refer to those alternative considerations as well. Jefferson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I hope this assists in your deliberations.
Thank you, Mr. Boshoff. Thank you for the detailed presentation. I should have told you that after presentation, members may want to ask for questions of clarity. If they are in a good mood, some may be tempted to say they agree or disagree with you. Don't feel bad. It is in the nature of the work we are doing. But under normal circumstances, we are going to listen and enrich ourselves on the presentation so that as we retreat as a portfolio committee, we know what people are saying. Let me see if I can get some members to comment. Honorable McDonald, do you want to comment? Makosini, you'll be the second. Honorable Chabangu, you'll be the second. Focha Hetse. Lawrence McDonald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Apologies, I pushed the wrong button there. Good morning, Chairperson. Goeiemôre, Theo. Chairperson, I'm just I'm agreeing with a lot what the presenter said. I do think that the alcohol industry, specifically the wine industry, need to come up with some solutions regarding pedestrians, specifically farm workers that get intoxicated and then get killed by drivers. The statistics of those pedestrians, of the 30% of the pedestrians, is skewed in the winelands because of the people that die in the winelands, about 45% of them to 50% of them are pedestrians. And I would wonder if they have any solutions or any ideas from them on how to reduce the fatalities on the roads from pedestrians regarding alcohol-related accidents. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chabangu.
Thank you, Chair. Sometimes I'm Makosini, sometimes I'm Honorable, but I know that we have got a long history of working together. Thank you. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, I can see your face and hear you properly. What can I answer?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I would like to know alcohol problems. How are you intending to curb this malpractice that seem to be the cause of death in our roads? Will be the changing of limit solve the problem? How about other related drug related matters that cause fatalities on the road, not excluding medication that has alcohol related substances in it? Last question, will be it a sin if we can say under the age of 25 should have 0% alcohol in their body while driving because it is still a youth age? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I see that those were the two questions. Mr. Boshoff, as you are here to assist the wine industry.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Let me just get one thing clear. Basically, the presentation is saying people must be allowed to consume a particular percentage of alcohol, which scientifically is deemed not to affect or impair their driving skills. Is that in a nutshell what your presentation is saying?
Yes, sir.
You can forge ahead, sir, and now I see people raising their hands. I thought I have concluded on this matter. Let me take the last hand, Honorable Onsinga. Honorable Onsinga, you can forge ahead before I can.
Thank you, Chairperson, and my apologies for only reacting now. I was offline for the last section.
Okay, sure.
Sorry, Chairperson.
You go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure whether I'm audible. The signal seems to be fluctuating on my side, so my apologies for that. I also missed the last part of Mr. Boshoff's presentation. So from my side, thank you, Mr. Boshoff, for a good submission for the part that I was exposed to, especially for the fact that it seemed to be well researched. Chairperson, through you, my question to Mr. Boshoff is, thank you for your submission with a well-formulated and well-thought-through argument that we should be considering. My question to you is that we are working on the premise that the majority of wines contain alcohol. And during COVID, I've seen a very exciting and positive trend of non-alcoholic drinks, even non-alcoholic wine. To what extent would you think this would expand further so that with a consideration of a stronger measure, because point is and fact is that South Africa does have the problem, just to recall a statement which you made. So to what extent would the wine industry be able to adapt to a majority culture of producing wine without alcohol? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Singer. I keep on saying the last. Let's take Honorable Fikile. Honorable Khumalo.
Morning, members. Morning, Chairperson. Honourable Member. Am I audible?
Yes, we can hear you. Morning. Morning, Honourable Member. Yeah, I think the Honourable Member's network is bad. Due to time constraints, we'll try and allocate some space when she comes back. Can you forge ahead, sir?
Yes, thank you very much, sir, and thank you for the questions. So yes, Chairperson, you are correct. The thrust of the presentation is that the objective to improve road safety is applauded. However, we're not sure that completely banning any level of alcohol in the blood would necessarily achieve that. So so our proposal is perhaps to keep some level of that, of a permitted blood alcohol in to be permitted in terms of the law. It's not to say that it necessarily can't change, but the 0% I think is a challenge. And perhaps this also speaks to Arnold Chivangu's question as well about what is regarded as youth, 21 or 25. I think that is certainly one alternative way to go, to perhaps keep it the same for those above 25 who have some road experience driving on the road, but perhaps to make it a 0% for those under 25. If, however, 0% is considered, I do think then something will have to be built into the law, some potential exceptions, for example, where it is the case that prescription medication has in fact created this false impression that there's some percentage of alcohol in the blood. So yes, Jefferson, that is certainly the proposal. That's to differentiate between youth versus those that are not youth. With regards to the question on the de-alkalized wine, I think one thing that is important to bear in mind, my colleagues from the wine industry might be able to answer a little bit better in terms of what the impact is on the taste and the quality of the wine if you do remove the alcohol. But I do know that, of course, responding to a market demand, these reduced alcohol wines weren't previously available. They are becoming more and more available at the moment. So that is one thing to consider. However, I think part of the challenge with having a 0%, so if one does move it from 0.05 to 0.02 or something to that effect, one can address this, but the challenge with a complete 0% is that any trace of alcohol in the blood will in fact constitute a criminal offense. So even these de-alkalized wines, I speak under correction, not being a technical expert from that specific industry, but I do believe that even though they are de-alkalized, it's not a guarantee that there's 0% alcohol in it. There might be a fragment, a percentage of a percentage of alcohol in it. And the challenge with the 0% is that then even a de-alkalized wine would in fact constitute a criminal offense. So there, once again, I think enforcement from a legal point of view, enforcing a 0% alcohol will be very, very difficult. If one does look at changing from 0.05 to something else, I think that's perhaps more of a feasible option, but 0% I think will be too difficult to enforce, because I know the de-alkalized wines as well as some of the de-alkalized beers might still have some trace element of alcohol in it. The solutions for pedestrians, I think that's also a very valid point as well. I think research will have to be done, or I can also go back and see if I can find some research whether or not the majority of these pedestrian incidents are caused by the pedestrians themselves consuming alcohol, or whether or not it's the drivers who have consumed alcohol and then hit the pedestrians that are crossing the road. I think that one would probably need a differentiated strategy to try to deal with those. I know the wine industry does have quite a few programs in place to try to support responsible use of alcohol, and that might speak to the issue of pedestrians who themselves consume alcohol and walk on the road. So I know the wine industry does have some programs in place, and perhaps direct contact with them we can also facilitate that, can try to improve to see if they can be upscaled, and can also try to determine what the success of those projects have been. I think it would be a little bit of a different matter if it's the intoxicated drivers who hit pedestrians. I think then it does come down to an enforcement issue again on the driver's side. The only challenge with, if it's the converse about pedestrians consuming alcohol and walking on the road, is that it's a very big real challenge and something one has to deal with, but I think that would be outside the scope of this legislation, because this legislation, of course, only applies to the operators of a motor vehicle. Jess, I hope I managed to answer most of those questions. I'm sure my colleagues in the wine industry will also be able to assist. And those questions I couldn't answer, if there's an opportunity, we can also liaise further with industry and try and get back to the committee members. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir. Theo Boshoff. Honorable Khumalo, are you in a better space now? Okay. So thank you very much for coming. We appreciate your time. We understand your presentation. We'll certainly take consideration of it as we move forward with the process. Thank you very much. Let's take this opportunity to liberate you if you have any other business to do. Under normal circumstances, presenters may stay for a while if they want to listen to other presentation. Whatever you choose to do, we want to thank you wholeheartedly that you find space and time in your busy schedule to come and talk to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, member.
Thank you. Let's forge ahead. To the next presentation, Valerie.
Chair, as I've indicated.
We now have the Stellenbosch.
Yes, Chair, Mr. Danny Cronier is online if he's ready to start.
Meneer Danny Cronier, Uganded, Meneer.
Very well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, you've caught me by surprise a bit with the message. You'll understand that I'm under instructions from the Stellenbosch wine route, and I've my instructing, the person instructing me, the chairperson of the wine route, is aware that the presentation has been scheduled for 10:30. I've been trying to get hold of her after the message was posted that, if possible, we could move the presentation forward, but I haven't managed to contact her, so I would respectfully request that we rather proceed at the designated time. I don't want to tell my clients afterwards that I've already appeared when they haven't had the opportunity to also participate, if that is acceptable.
Well, let me say it up front. It's not assisting us, but you are within your rights, because that was the time given to you, sir. Valerie?
I want to know from Wesgro, or if they are ready to start, or if not, I see Mr. Johan Steenkamp is online from the NNPR. If he's prepared to start so that he can then finish earlier than his 12:30 slot.
Mr. Johan, sir.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning to you. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear, sir. How are you this morning? Beautiful Tuesday to you.
I'm well, thank you very much. I'm well, thank you. Indeed. Yes. Good morning, Mrs. Carlson, as well, and thank you for organising our participation in this meeting. Thank you very much. Indeed, my presentation is not a lengthy one. It is just a few comments that I would like to raise, if possible, honourable if the honourable members would allow me this opportunity, we can proceed.
Chairperson, we cannot hear you.
has muted me, ek sê reg so meneer, ons kan voortgaan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. First and foremost, I would like to thank you to be part of this esteemed panel. I would like to introduce myself. I'm Johan Steenekamp. I'm the Managing Director of New Number Plate Requisites, which is a private company that's a blank number plate manufacturer. We are supplying blank number plates throughout the Republic of South Africa to all 9 provinces. The concern that we've got is briefly the recent comments that has been made by the Director General of Transport, Director Alec Mohemi, pertaining to the embedding of micro dots into a new number plate. I see this has been published in the media since November 2020, and there's been a lot of publications made with regards to the number plates also being part of the road traffic amendment bill. In this regard, I would just like to advise that we have been part of this the number plate industry for the last 25 years. And I'm also a member of the South African Bureau of Standards Committee since 2009 and various subcommittees and task teams and so on. And the issue of micro dots has not been raised in any of these forums. I see Mr. Advocate Johannes Magatu and also Mr. John Musasing is also part of this panel, and I would like to also first of all say good morning to these two gentlemen, and they might shed some light to us with regard to the planned micro dots on motor vehicles. If I can just go back a few years, there's been a couple of projects in various provinces that also just wanted to justify the use of certain RFID tags, for example, in Gauteng and another project in another province, where they also justified the securitization aspects of number plates to monitor the movement of vehicles between provinces, and that hasn't been of a great success. Especially the RFID tags were punted at one stage as the project you would have applied a sort of a RFID tag underneath the Gauteng coat of arms, and that would have justified the movement of vehicles and the monitoring as such. So my question is on the micro dots aspect, I certainly haven't come across any forum that showed us that micro dots for dotting on a number plate would justify the movement of vehicles or monitor the movement of vehicles and be picked up underneath these gantries, or bridges or whatever kind of justification there is for that, because it's a very small item that you actually need quite specialized equipment to be able to read and these transmitted um, transmitters. So that is the other concern is since 2015 there has been no consultation with industry besides the possible amendment act of the Road Traffic Amendment Act that was gazetted in January 2015. Besides that, there hasn't been any consultation, and that is really the concern that we're raising today.
Thank you very much. Mr. Steenkamp, Johan Steenkamp. I'm sure you are not expecting a discussion on this matter today. We can say we have heard your presentation. We will consider and engage the department in terms of this process after the process of public hearings has been concluded. The department will come back to us in response and we'll take it from there.
I thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. That was the only concern that we are raising, and we would just request a transparent process, and all stakeholders should be consulted in the way we're going forward. We are certainly in favour of securitisation, and we acknowledge the fact that there is a need for perhaps a national number plate in future, and we would like to be part of the process like any other company, or private company, and I thank you very much for the opportunity that you've given and the time that you've given us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Johan Steenkamp. You may be released or you may choose to be with us. It's okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much.
Valerie, are we having anybody available? Is Mr. Danny Kronje's challenges resolved?
Mr. Chairperson? I haven't made contact with my client yet. I'm trying to do so. I'll let you know as soon as I've made contact.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Carol, sir?
Chair, can we take a break in the meantime for 30 minutes while we wait for the Stellenbosch Wine Route client to be online? Members must remember that we give our stakeholders time in advance, weeks in advance for the presentation. So when there's a last call cancellation, it's very difficult to fill that slot. So the others will be later.
Don't feel bad. Where's your Westcro VinPro?
Chair Westcro has a panel that will be presenting. So not all of the stakeholders are online yet.
Oh, okay. Otherwise, they would have seized this opportunity. But it's okay. So we're taking a break of how many minutes?
Chair, 30 would be in order to start then again at 10:15.
Thank you very much. 10:15. Let's come back around 10:10. Am I correct? Thank you very much. Members, let's go and drink tea.
Thank you, Mangete.
Wabona ke wena omangasenhla wenze njalo ngiphuza enzasi mfowethu ngiyabona. Presentation by the Stellenbosch wine will only be possible around 10:30 as scheduled, which is indeed well within their rights. I have seen an ambassador here. Can I greet Ambassador Mahlomola? Is Ambassador Mahlomola here? Dick. Wambil or ambassador. Jambas. Wambil or Jambas.
Chairperson?
Ngibona ugibela indiza lapha Jambasa uvela kancinci lapho isendizeni uyaphila mpwethu
ngiyaphila
uyabona ke lento so ukhuluma kanjani Jambasa kunzima la
mina ngisa-challenge nje ini angizoma ngathi angizwanga mangathi ngiliphosile la
bengithi kungenzeki ukuthi use Western Cape manje iphunga le wine lenza ukuthi into zakho zihambe slow ba
Hayi ngilapha mari iphunga le wine angilibona i-challenge nje i-technology ama devices wam ayangihlupha nje morning honorable Hunsinger.
Good morning colleague, are you well?
I'm well, and how are you?
That's good. Are you in Cape Town or at home base?
Good morning, Comrade Jambas. Good morning, Chris.
Morning. Are you well, Honorable McDee?
Always well, thank you. And there by you? How's the weather there by you?
Oh, it's a lovely, bright, blue sky day. We've had a nice shower of rain yesterday, over, well, close to 30 millimeters, in fact.
Yeah, today makes the 45th day of load shedding in the last financial year.
Oh, That's too much.
Do you have a car of load shedding day?
No, it's bad currently.
Are you intending to depress us or to motivate us?
Motivate my honorable friends.
I need motivation today. My gadgets are playing around with me. I really need motivation. But load shedding is very far from motivation I'm looking for.
My honourable friend Manu, we are as far as I understand that this is now the new normal. We wear masks and we have no electricity during the day, so this is now our new normal. For the next 5 years, we have to get used to that. There's nothing that we can do about it. We will now start going back to burning fires to make our food.
But they are getting worse now. I'd accepted Manchu. Now you have moved to Manu now.
I am practicing, Honorable Manu.
Anybody in the department who wants to answer Honorable Hunsinger?
Jefferson, if I may. Is the department here, Jefferson?
Yes. Baba Shabisa, who people?
Yeah. Salo, Sonfegile, morning, Chairperson and the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Yes, I do have the colleagues from the department. Yes, we did hear the guest who was concerning about the micro dot and also that the industry might interfere with the business and stuff like that. His business has been running for more than 30 years. And I think, but the sentiment is that the micro dot has to be built into the number plate to avoid quite a number of things like your cloning issues, like your abuse of the number plates in general. So I think what we will do, we will have to, and let me get John Mutasing. I do have Advocate Makhato as well, who are coming from our section, the regulation section, to take us through just the highlights of it, not in detail, because we are still going to write a report to the Portfolio Committee when we get invited to come and discuss these matters. But I think it's a fair Chairperson, just to say, and honorable members, just to say, let's give just a glimpse of it as to what is it that we are doing, as was mentioned by our Director General in one of the media houses. So I think let me ask John Mutasing and maybe Advocate Makhato to take the stage, just a brief of it, not in detail, so that we can do the proper submission to the Portfolio Committee when we're asked to do so. Thank you very much, President. Let me ask Advocate Makhato. I don't know whether you have logged in, Makhato.
Thanks, morning, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me ask Advocate Makhato to just give the glimpse of it, just the highlight of it, not in detail. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Hunsinger, you want to come in before Advocate
Makhato? Can you repeat the question? Yes. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it's a very basic question. Is the intention to include micro dotting in the number plates only, or is the intention to also include it in the deco of the bodywork as well? Just that. Thank you, Chairperson. As we currently speak, what is the current application suggesting in the draft as it stands?
Over to you, Advocate.
Thanks, Chairperson. As it stands now, micro dot are embossed on bodies of vehicles, Chairperson. So with the advent of prevention of cloning of number plates and vehicles, the move is to head towards that. It's more of a security feature than anything else, Chairperson. Thank you. And Mr. Mutasing can amplify or add or, yeah, can amplify to what I said. Thank you.
Chairperson, my hand is raised.
Yeah. Okay, let's not hijack the department that much. They will do let me see if we still have time. We are left with 5 minutes, Honorable McDonald.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to ask a follow-up question on Honorable Hunsinger's question. In the endeavor to put micro dots onto the license plates to ensure that there's no falsification or duplication of number plates, how is that going to be enforced if traffic officers don't have micro dot readers? Are they planning to give traffic officers micro dot readers, Jefferson? Thank you.
Can you lower your hand, sir? Um, Isn't it, Advocate Makhatu, I hear you saying, and Ubabuhlabisa lapha, DDG, that this presentation is coming to the department, to the portfolio committee. Am I correct?
Indeed, Chairperson, you're correct.
It's on its way here.
As part of the as part of the responses to inputs that we received from members of the public.
Makhatu. Yeah, I know we are dealing with wines today, but maybe it's a problem of network in Gauteng. I think, as I've said, members, let's allow the department to give their response properly so that we can interact with that response. Otherwise, you want to preempt the response, the proper response, or we may then say at a later stage, you said this department, now you're presenting a different story. Take Honorable McDonald's question quickly, if you are able, Advocate. And Dade Mutazi.
All right. Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members, Babuhlabisa and Advocate Makhatu. No, that's correct. The generally what we wanted to deal with was to the extent of dealing with the cloning and the easy access of number plate, to try and come up with means and ways where we'll be able to properly protect the number plates. It's not only one of the interventions that we are proposing. Microdot is one of them, but also we would want to review the entire process of number plates to a certain extent. In relation to Microdot, yes, Honorable Member, the law enforcement officers will then have to have the same as the ACPS has, microdot readers, to be able then to can read the microdots that are fitted on the number plate. In relation to how it will then be applied on motor vehicles, it is generally going to be applied on some of the bodies, or generally the entire body of the motor vehicle strategically located in the body of the vehicles, wherein when you do law enforcement, you will be able then, excuse me, to be able to check on those particles or on those parts where the micro dot is supposed to be applied. Because in terms of the standards, the SABS requirement, the micro dot has to be fitted specifically on certain parts of a motor vehicle. I submit, Chairperson.
As you submit, thank you very much, Ndate John Mutsatsing from the Department of Transport. Please hold it there, and with pleasure, we now go back to the presentation by Stellenbosch. Roots. Mr. Danny Kronje.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the honorable members for giving us this opportunity, and also good morning to the other persons in this meeting. I believe there's even an ambassador. Good morning, Mr. Ambassador. Just some background, my involvement, I'm an attorney from Dani Kronje Attorneys in Stellenbosch. We advise role players in the liquor industry, including Woolworths, Pick and Pay, Distel, a number of the major wine routes and other role players. In our presentation, we've dealt with very practical implications of the proposed change. I must thank Mr. Bossoff, who was gave his presentation earlier. He referred to quite a number of points which we think are very valid and which I will also briefly refer to. But I think our starting point here is that, and I think, Mr. Chairman, you referred to it, that it's scientifically deemed or determined that having a level of alcohol of 0.05% or up to 0.05% does not impair driving skills. I think I've not seen any evidence to contradict that, and that is also, it seems, in a majority of wine-producing nations, that has also been accepted if one looks at the list which Mr. Bossoff so kindly also showed to the committee, and I think which we've included in our presentation. So in that regard, one of the first submissions of the wine routes is that making this change will not contribute to combating the harms caused by people driving motor vehicles under the influence, because people with that limited amount of alcohol is not more likely to cause an accident than people without any alcohol in the blood. The big problem we have is that it will turn, and as sometimes happens with legislation, it will turn law-abiding citizens into offenders. And your legal advisor will know that once legislation has that effect, then there's probably a problem with the proposal. Mr. Bossoff referred to the cough medicine. And as far as I know, it's not only prescription medicine that contain alcohol, but also cough medicine that one can simply buy at your pharmacy, and that is a problem. He also referred to the medical condition in terms of some people's bodies producing alcohol without them having ingested any alcoholic beverages. That is also a problem, because essentially having a zero tolerance approach will mean that ordinary law-abiding citizens could be charged with driving a motor vehicle with more than the permitted level of alcohol when they don't pose any danger to anyone else. And that is a serious problem. I think I've already referred to the practice in other countries. What is something overlooked is the effect that it will have on people employed in the wine industry. You will be aware that there are people that are involved in the judging of wines, not only for competitions, but also for purposes of evaluating those wines in terms of the legislation which governs the safety of liquor in terms of the Liquor Products Act. Now, those people will be forced, just when doing their job, to always have to arrange for alternative transport at the additional costs, when essentially they are not consuming the alcohol for their pleasure. They are purely tasting it in terms of the prescribed protocols which they follow, and which eventually will result in them retaining a certain amount of alcohol in their blood, again, below the level which is currently permitted. So it will, for those people, it will become a serious problem, but it goes wider than that. You will be aware that obviously businesses which buy wine from producers often also have representatives which need to go out and taste the wine, maybe one or two wines only. But again, somebody who goes out for purposes of evaluating whether they want to stock that wine in Woolworths or in Pick n Pay or any other of the retailers will on occasion taste the wine, or that will be their job. And now they will suddenly be at risk, even if they tasted only a single wine or one or two wines, spat out the wine, not drinking it, but they will be at risk of breaking the law when merely doing their job. And again, they would then have to make arrangements for alternative transport, which would complicate things and add costs to a job which currently they do without problems. Also, the wine tourism industry, we've pointed out the importance of that, and it's been recognized by national government. You will be aware that not long ago when the lockdown regulations were eased, there was even a stage when the national government deemed it necessary to permit wineries to offer wine tastings and sell their wine on weekends when it was not permitted for liquor stores or other outlets. We submit that the national government recognized the very important role that wine tourism on wine farms and the visits to wine farms by local and overseas tourists play. Now, again, if a tourist, overseas tourist or a local tourist visits a South African wine farm and wants to taste one or two or three wines, again, spitting out the wine, but merely tasting for the purpose of deciding whether they want to buy the wine, they will now be at risk of contravening the act and again would have to make specific alternative arrangements for transport purely for only tasting wine, not even going out to drink wine like one would do at a restaurant. And it is known that in South Africa, our public transport is not accessible everywhere or readily available everywhere. And that is even more so for the more rural wineries. Wineries in more distant areas is not in the same position as, for example, the wineries surrounding a town like Stellenbosch. And those wineries will be severely prejudiced if tourists, local or overseas, would not want to risk even tasting the wine. Some of the wines, you may be aware of, are quite expensive nowadays, the quality wines, and people will be even more reluctant to taste wine if it's going to be at a considerable cost. So that is again something that should be taken into account. The same applies to restaurants. If people visiting a restaurant, we all know the custom of designating a driver. If one goes to a restaurant in a group, one person will then restrain from drinking more than perhaps their half a glass of wine or the permitted quantity, and they would sip it all evening so that they are safe to drive at the end of the evening. What will happen now is that person will be deprived of even that opportunity to drink wine, which will still leave them within the safe limit or within the range of being able to drive the vehicle safely. And it would make people less eager to visit restaurants. You know, if a couple goes to a restaurant and one of the partners now is not even permitted to drink half a glass of wine with their partner simply to avoid having any alcohol in their blood. I think in essence, I think maybe I can also just address one issue that was referred to Mr. Borshoff in terms of the de-alkalized wine and that the implications if one considers the proposed change. I must be honest, from personal experience, I've tasted one or two of these de-alkalized wines and to my palate, they simply don't taste the same. They taste very thin. I don't know whether that's true of all the wines, but it certainly makes a difference to the taste of the wine in one's mouth. I think it must also be remembered that even though wine is de-alkalized, you will see if you go to some of the websites where these wines are marketed, that even though it's marketed as alcohol free, there is still a small percentage of alcohol. Sometimes it's 0.03%, I've seen before. So even there, one would be at risk unless you actually can verify that this is a totally alcohol-free product, that you will be at risk even if you consume one of those. So that is not necessarily a solution to accept that people will now drink de-alkalized wines or low alcohol wines, because they will perhaps still be at risk. I think in essence, Mr. Chairman, that is our problem, that there are significant unintended consequences for a lot of people employed in the wine industry. If we're talking about winemakers, people involved in the evaluation of wine, talking about people buying wine, those will all be affected. There are also severe unintended consequences for the tourism experience, local and international tourists, which are very, very important for our economy, not over in the Western Cape, but throughout the country. And then finally, we do not think that this change will necessarily make a difference to the contributing the harms caused by alcohol or people driving under the influence of alcohol. I think Mr. Bosov referred to that perhaps one should look at the law enforcement of the current restrictions. And then finally, we haven't mentioned it in our presentation, but it's come up quite often when the whole issue of alcohol abuse or alcohol-related harms is considered. In one essence, one can, or it's my opinion that we're talking more about a social problem than a legal problem. That the fact that people consume too much liquor is, one must look at the reason why they do it and treat those consequences, which is perhaps more difficult than changing the legislation. Especially in South Africa, it's been well publicized during the alcohol ban that there are approximately 67,500 outlets with liquor licenses in the country, but it's estimated that there are 180,000 illegal outlets in the country. So a large problem, large section of the problem lies outside the regulated sphere. And legislative interventions are often less effective if that's the situation. It may not be necessarily applicable here when we're talking about driving, where it's another set of legislation. But I think it is important that the educating our current road users and our future road users is of the utmost importance. If we can convince people to consume alcohol responsibly, drink alcohol and drive responsibly, then we perhaps wouldn't need to have meetings such as these at all. Mr. Chairperson, I think in essence, we've said what we wanted to say in our presentation. I think the main concern is it will turn law-abiding citizens into criminals. It will have a number of unintended consequences which will be detrimental to a number of people's jobs in the industry and also to the contribution that the industry and the responsible side of the industry makes to our economy and to job creation.
Thank you, Dr. Danny Cronje. Members, do you wish to raise any clarity-seeking question, Honorable McDonald? Is there any other hand? Except that hand, Honorable Pete May. Those are the two hands I'm seeing currently. Thank you very much. Let's forge ahead, members.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Apologies, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. It was very similar to the previous presentation, and I agree that it would adversely affect the wine, specifically the wine tasting economy. But we have to find a solution to a lot of problems, and one of the problems that we do have is the abuse of alcohol by pedestrians. And now that we have the Stellenbosch winers, all of them here, I would really like to know if they got any solutions to the problems of pedestrians, specifically in the winelands areas, because it's skewed. The more people are dying in the Western Cape of alcohol-related pedestrian deaths than anywhere else in the country. And if the industry is thinking of assisting with some way to reduce the deaths, Chairperson. So if there's any, that's not really a question. I just wanted to know if they've got any inputs on that issue. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Member McDonald. As you lower your hand, let's hear Akbar Pidle.
Thank you, Voorzitter. Thank you, Mr. Cronier. We have listened to many, many speakers over the last 10 days. I would like to ask you only one question. What do you suggest? 0.02, 0.05? What is your personal opinion? Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. If I could start with the straightforward question at the end, my suggestion and our instructions are to remain with the 0.05. That is the instructions. In terms of the question with the, in terms of pedestrians, I do not have enough information to know exactly where these pedestrians, you know, where these occasions occur. I think the problem with pedestrians is obviously legislation which governs the amount of liquor that you have in your, or alcohol that you have in your blood when driving will not have an effect on somebody drinking and then walking. That is a problem. I think in terms of combating alcohol abuse in general, the education is the important part, because it's very difficult to regulate what somebody drinks at home when he can purchase that liquor legally at many outlets. And in that sense, I think the important thing is education. People must be educated regarding the risks of alcohol abuse. Obviously, reducing the number of illegal outlets is also very important, because as the members will probably know that if you're a licensed outlet, one of the conditions of your license is that you may not sell liquor to a person who is intoxicated. But that is obviously only a threat or a risk for people with liquor license. If you're illegal in any event, if you're selling liquor without a license at any time that you want without being restricted by hours or whom you sell to, then that doesn't make a difference. So before we try and solve the problem by restricting out illegal outlets that are already within the net and under police scrutiny, the problem of the illegal outlets should be addressed either by bringing them into the fold or closing them down. That is a major factor, because even if we say that everyone is equally guilty, which is obviously not true, then it means that about two-thirds or three-quarters of the problems relating to liquor sales is outside the net.
Thank you very much, Mr. Danny Cronje. I hope you did manage to get all your members to connect. Thank you very much for the detailed presentation. I think the issue here is the message you want to pass as companies that are involved with winery. The issue is all about the 0%. We have heard that. We will consider your submission as we move forward in terms of this legislation. Thank you very much. You are released, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your day further.
The same to you.
Thank you. There is a submission by a group of, I'm going to call them companies for the purposes of the meeting. SAL, BA, Vinpro, BASA, SIBASA. Are these people in the meeting?
Yes, Chair, we are here.
No, that's not what I'm expecting. I'm expecting many voices. Yes, Chair. Here's Chair.
Yes, Chair, we are here. Thank you. It's the woman, Chair. We're always the loudest.
Oh, it's a group of women.
And yes. one rose, Chair.
One rose amongst the thorns, Chair.
Okay, listen, one rules amongst the thoughts. The first submission was that it's a woman. So if women are many, that rules would not count. I can see all of you. Thank you very much. That was on a lighter note. Let me allow you to forge ahead. Let's hear your submission. We are all ears, ready to listen to the presentation, and so that as we take this process forward, we have accommodated as many presentations and submissions as possible. Let me thank you for making time really to come and talk to the portfolio committee and tell us what you think could be done to save lives, save jobs, save businesses in South Africa, because economy, as we all know, should always form an integral part of our lives. You can forge ahead. Thank you. We are all ears.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to the Portfolio Committee for affording us an opportunity to come and present. I just want to first start by introducing the team. You'd have seen from our first slide that we are representatives from manufacturers and distributors of alcoholic beverages. We fall under the auspices of BASA, the Beer Association of South Africa, as well as SALBA, the South African Liquor Brand Owners Association of South Africa. The key members who are leading this delegation and presentation today is Diageo, Distell, Heineken, Pernod Ricard, and South African Breweries. There are a number of smaller businesses who are not represented here today, but whose full mandate we carry. They include companies such as KWV and DGB. Under BASA, there is the Craft Brewers Association, and BASA represents up to 240 craft brewers in South Africa. So that's who we are, the presenters on the call. Let me start with Ms. Patricia Pillay. Ms. Patricia Pillay is the CEO of BASA. Then we have Ms. Pravashini Govender. She is with Distell. Ms. Pamela Nkuna is a representative from South African Breweries, as well as Ms. Helen Ndlovu, who is also on the call representing South African Breweries. My name is Kurt Moore. I am with SALBA, and I am the CEO of the organization. My colleague Pamela will be leading or assisting us, so thank Pamela. So just briefly, in terms of our presentation, which we have for you today, I will do a brief introduction. Ms. Nkuna will do item two on the agenda, which is our social compact to address drinking and driving. We have a concise industry submission to the Portfolio Committee on the bill. That will be delivered by Ms. Govender, and then finally Ms. Pillay will conclude, and then we'll have some time for questions. Thank you, Pamela. Next slide, please. Chair, we have to start by saying, as an industry, we are equally concerned about road fatalities on our road. We think as a society we have to start addressing the high levels of fatalities on the road, especially those who break the law by driving over the blood alcohol content limit. Furthermore, as an industry, we think that we need holistic programs that are evidence-based to reduce fatalities. You'll see in our later presentation, we're doing some great work assisting the Department of Transport with alcohol evidence centers, and we need to amplify that. We think that the solution lies in strong partnerships. Policy amendments are great. Stricter regulatory enforcement would also help, as well as addressing social norms. And I think those are all the issues if we want to address drinking and driving and drinking and walking, which, as many of the members of the Portfolio Committee have pointed, is also a problem which needs addresses. We certainly want to join forces with the Department of Transport. We note that the target of 20% is an ambitious one, but we think it's attainable if we all work together. I think as an industry, we're in full support of the objectives of the proposed amendments to the bill, and even the reduction of the BAC levels. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for your leadership, and we believe that by joining forces, those ambitious targets of reducing road deaths are indeed attainable. Thank you very much, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to all honourable members of Parliament and Portfolio Committee and other stakeholders. As Mr. Moore has introduced me, I'm Pamela Nkuna from South African Breweries, responsible for public affairs and regulatory matters. And today I'm here to discuss with you the social compact and the good interventions that I've had that will make impact and that is going to make a great game changer to road safety and road fatalities in South Africa. So as Mr. Moore has mentioned, we are working with evidence-based programs. And in terms of the evidence-based programs, we have done research to see where are the high-risk areas, where do most of the traffic deaths occur, and what is the timing of those accidents and which days. So in terms of that data that we got, we managed to pull out the insights and then move into and directly link it into flagship programs that we as an industry can implement to achieve the desired impact of reducing fatalities in South Africa. So one of the flagship programs is the Alcohol Evidence Centers. And I think I'm speaking to most of the experts here who know that Alcohol Evidence Centers is the game changer to road fatalities, to reduce road fatalities, because currently our system uses blood testing. And as we know, we don't ever get successful prosecutions or convictions in terms of blood testing. But the difference with the Alcohol Evidence Center is that we are now using technology, the EBAT machine, which is the evidential breath alcohol testing machine. And this machine tests your breath. And the difference with this machine is that you get immediate results. You don't have to go through the laboratories and through the court systems. The legal document is immediately presented in terms of your breath alcohol content, and you can get a successful prosecution of a drunk driver within a period of 14 days. And I will show you results, positive results and impact made in terms of the alcohol evidence centers that have thus far been implemented. So as an industry, we plan to roll out 35 alcohol evidence centers in the form of mobile and in the form of buildings across South Africa by 2022. We also want to have all of the hotspot data that I've mentioned earlier so that we are making the impact at the right places. Another flagship is that we want to have mobile court so that we can even fast track the prosecution on the spot. Imagine if we had to remove all of the long years of trying to get a prosecution and get an immediate prosecution on the spot. That would be a big game changer for road fatalities in South Africa. Another point is that we're also working closely with the United Institute for Training and Research, that's UNITA, where they could also provide law enforcement education and training to our officers in South Africa so that we are better equipped to deal with this huge societal problem. Another flagship program for the industry is Safely Home. And here we have a number of programs where we have a designated driver to actually help to drive somebody who is consuming alcohol. A big part of this Safely Home program is saying all of our major events as an industry will become car-free zones. So we will use alternative transports like Uber or any other ride-sharing options that are available. And one that speaks directly to drinking and walking is our Community Patrollers Network program, where we escort people safely from a place of consumption to their homes. And I will show you in the next few slides some of the great work that we've done in this regard. In summary, out of the drink driving programs, we are aiming to use the KPI of reducing fatalities in South Africa, of increasing the successful prosecutions in South Africa, and increasing the number of arrests of drunk drivers. So as I've mentioned earlier, the Pietermaritzburg Alcohol Evidence Center has been implemented in KZN in April 2019 with the then Minister of Department of Transport. And SAB has invested in the technology that was used. And you can see a picture here on my presentation. This is the EBAT machine. That is the new technology for breath alcohol testing to speed the prosecution in terms of drunk drivers. And the good results and the impact that we've achieved from this kind of a technology in Pietermaritzburg is we've received a 44% reduction in road fatalities. And here we took the same period last year comparison to post the Alcohol Evidence Center being launched. Other great impact that has been achieved is there were over 1,500 arrests made, over 1,094 confirmed successful convictions. And one that I'm very proud of is 307 successful prosecutions. And why I'm proud of that is because prior to the Alcohol Evidence Center, there were actually zero successful prosecutions made in that particular area. So as you see, that will be a big game changer to also change people's behavior on our roads once they know that people are getting successfully prosecuted. I'm going to take you through some of the programs that have been implemented through aware.org. And here the focus was on drinking and driving in terms of above the line media campaigns, but also in terms of on the ground drinking and walking. And I'm not going to give you too much of detail here, but I'd like to show you some of the positive impact in terms of the programs that I've spoken about and in terms of how aware.org has achieved some outstanding impact for drinking and driving. So during the 2020-2021 Festive Social Norms campaign, we partnered through aware.org and our industry with the Honorable Minister Mbalula, Minister of Transport. And the impact is that we've managed to stop, together with the department, over 1.3 million vehicles. The K78 roadblocks were over 1,600. And there were over 4,000 arrests for various offenses during that period. The outcome was that the arrest for drunk driving was a 40% of total arrests, which is 1,600. So the impact that we achieve in terms of the World Health Organization KPI to reduce fatalities was a 7% decline that was reported in road fatalities compared to the previous year. Also, in terms of other programs that have been done, as I mentioned, the designated driver program, we've issued 2,585 Uber vouchers plus 3,200 industry ride sharing vouchers and airtime vouchers. And all of this was across South Africa in these provinces. And this contributed, as was earlier mentioned, we need to have a holistic approach. And we're trying to make sure that our approach is a 360 approach and it covers all different angles to achieve the impact that we require. Something important from the Safely Home program was an investment of over 7 million was made. But in terms of the community patrollers who actually went into the outlets and walked patients safely home, there was a reduction in pedestrian fatalities of 10%. And these steps were worked with the steps on a quarterly basis. So there's various steps, and in the essence of time, I don't want to go through all of them, but I will hand over to my team members now. Thank you so much.
I am looking at you. I am seeing you. You can forge ahead, man.
So in terms of our submission, we've made a submission to the Department of Road Transport of Transport. We have a zero tolerance. In terms of that submission, we talk of a zero tolerance to drinking and driving because that's what our full ambition around it is. We understand and appreciate the legislative intent, and we support that. And we want to play our part in achieving the reduction of fatalities in our roads. But what we want to explore and talk about is a 360 approach is required to actually achieve that, so that the desired impact of reducing fatalities on our roads is actually met. We need to move the needle, and the only way to move the needle is to use evidence-based methodologies that achieve optimal impact on our roads. We submit that the NRTAB, together with an intensified law enforcement, evidence-based programs such as well as education, awareness programs, can be the most effective way in reducing fatalities in South Africa. So the Department of Transport, therefore, has our full support in implementing the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill. The key to success, as I said earlier, is strong enforcement and implementation. However, we also have done a lot of research and work on drinking and driving and road safety as an issue. It is our belief that in order to address the issue of road safety, we have to have a broader approach. What we did is, as an industry, because we take this very seriously, we looked into, okay, how big is the carnage on the roads? Where exactly does the problem lie? Let's look at the stats and the numbers that are provided in, you know, the reports of government. So what we found from government, and this comes from the OECD Transport Forum from 2019, as well as the Road Traffic Management Corporation study of 2016-2018, we find that alcohol is estimated to account for 3.4% to 5.5% of road fatalities. Okay? So that's one key point. The other point is that arrests for drunken driving make up 0.4% of offenses. For us, the larger challenge is around overloading of goods and passengers and people not wearing their seat belts. And the optimal solution at the end of the day is for us to look at all of these issues. How do we effect solutions to all of these if we want to address the public policy concern around safety on our roads, which we believe is the key issue when we're dealing with this particular bill. Thank you.
I think very important on that last slide, as you can see also, is the fact that the enforcement, and if you look at that last slide, Pamela, before you moved off, I think very important there, as you can see, that out of the arrests, there's only 0.2% arrests. And that is very concerning for us, because I think that's where that part of enforcement comes in, is that, and Pam raised that as well, how lovely it would be if we could get those mobile courts so we can speed up that prosecution process and get whatever that offense may be, we can make sure that there's more arrests, and that would also lead to behavior change. And I think that is what we need in this country, because I think people have taken for granted, and we as South Africans have taken for granted that we can get stopped, we can get away, and you know, we carry on driving. We don't get our licenses revoked. We can just get into the car the next day. And this is concerning for us out of this, is that there's only 0.2% that have been arrested. So I think in conclusion, there's a lot that we have shared. There's a lot more that we have, but we've tried to summarize it. We're happy to share the presentation as well with the data. But as an industry, we really want to confirm our commitment to working together, because I think that we all have information and data, but it's only when we bring it together that we're able to come up with a holistic solution, because I think we are all after the same result. And that is to be able to turn this behavior around of our South Africans and the road carnage that is going on in our country. And it's not only over the festive seasons. We see it amplified over the festive seasons, but it is throughout the year that we do see this. And we want to affect this road use in terms of also harmful use of alcohol. But as we've seen in the stats, it's over a whole range of issues. It's the overloading, it's the use of seatbelts, it's a whole range of issues, and we need to address that. And we definitely feel enforcement, and where we can support as industry to capacitate that with our AEC programs, which we really believe are really strong. You know, we don't, it's not a program that we is new to us. We've already got AECs around the country, so we know the success of this program, and we have the support of law enforcement in terms of that. And definitely we have to adopt the zero tolerance for the offenders. And I think this issue of the BAC, it is a controversial one. We've sat in on the presentations, we've heard the views, and we're not medical and technical experts. And that's why we're not commenting on it in our presentation. And we can't respond to that in our presentation, unfortunately, or any questions on that. I think we will be guided by the experts on what the percentage should be. But what we are saying as an industry, we do not advocate for drinking and driving, where it will impair your ability to drive. We do not believe that people should be getting behind the wheel if they are unable to control that vehicle. So we really want to work with the department, with the committee, in turning about this change in the country. So thank you, Chair. We're really willing to take questions, and so I'm happy for the direction of the questions.
Thank you very much, ma'am, for the detailed presentation. Let's see if members have some questions for you or comments. We have heard you very well that you are not in a position to comment about the BAC because you're not experts. Honorable Mapena, any other hand? Honorable Lawrence McDonald. Those will be the two. Honorable McDonald will be the third one. Let's forget ahead, sir. Baba umhlonishwa maphela
ngithokoza sihlalo ngithokoza ithube ngilithola namhlanje kusini ngilotshise bonke abalingani ngilotshise nengikhambeli zethu ezize emhlanganweni I think on the issue that I think it was umama Oprah Vashni governor saying that in South Africa we have a it's like drivers who generally engage in behavior which is not consistent with the law, they tend to do that as they feel that they can always get away with it. And in terms of, if you look at the stats, you say that it was only about 2% of drivers that feel that they can be stopped or anything like that. But there are other mechanisms. I understand that you don't want to comment on the PAC, but in terms of there is legislation currently, ARDO, which was on trial in the big metros for quite some time. It speaks about the demerit points. in terms of someone losing their license. I heard Mr. Elagumam Kavanda was speaking to like people almost acting with impunity towards law enforcement. And also, even if they are over and above the limit of alcohol, they would feel that they can still get away with it. So which brings into question the issue of the firm hand of our law enforcement agency. But if you look at the other legislation that government has put in place in terms of ARTO, we can say to a great detail and to a great degree that ARTO has not worked. And that is a mechanism which has just come into play. Now, with you not wanting to comment on the BAC levels, I also am not a big proponent of the 0% BAC. But I would say maintaining it at its current rate perhaps might assist us. And obviously, you are stakeholders, you have an interest as far as this is concerned. So if we say we want the BAC to be 0%, obviously, chances are it might affect you negatively in terms of your profit margins and all of those things. I'm not saying that you guys are encouraging people breaking the law and all of those things. But fact of the matter is, if people start consuming less or no alcohol at all as they drive, but also there are those other aspects where people also, if they are stopped, even if someone is not engaged in an alcoholic beverage, but in terms of medicine, cough syrups, and all those other substances and some foods. I remember there were, now that we're approaching the Easter, the cross buns, you know, that are hit during Easter. But if you consume a cross bun and you come across a roadblock, you might just be put behind bars because your alcohol volume in your body tends to be affected like, you know, north upwards. So, yeah, but that is my comment. But I would want to, I understand that you don't want to make a comment as far as that, but if you can, what would you say?
Thank you very much, Mzonishwa. Let's get Olandelayo, the next speaker.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also would like to thank all the presenters on the Chairperson, I just want to make a comment, and the comment is I am very glad that the industry is taking a holistic look at this and also pointing out that one of the major failures or one of the biggest contributions to road is all the other laws that are broken, the overloading, et cetera, et cetera. And these also contribute mostly to the deaths on our roads. And we must look at this from a law enforcement point of view. And it doesn't matter if they make the alcohol level -2, 0.-2, if people are still going to drink, if nobody's ever going to stop them and there's no law enforcement. So I'm very glad that the industry is taking bold steps in assisting us in that regard. But I do think that, in my personal opinion, that the BAC should stay as it is. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Honorable McDonald. Next.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also thank the presenters for a holistic program. The holistic program, how are you going to locate the alcohol centers, especially at the rural places, because of the unavailability of facilities and vastness of the funds? This also needs transport and catering. Who will facilitate, and where is money going to be tapped from? Are you not going to ask government to lay a helping hand at a later stage? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chabangu Ngwane. Let me go back to the team for their response.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the honorable members. for their question and also for their attention to our presentation as well. I think for us, the reason why we were staying away from the BSC is we didn't want our a focus of our presentation to become about that one matter. We really wanted to rather open our minds here to the thinking of how we were going to tackle this very serious issue. And the reason I'm saying that is because when you look at some of the data that's out there, and I know one of the previous presenters, the first one this morning, also spoke about that, is that now it's the BSC sitting at 0.05%. And in 1996, he referred to the level being at 0.08%. And there is not a, there was actually an increase, if I remember the reference, to from 10,256 to 17,597 cases in 2017. So I think the point that's being made is, even though the percentage of BSC was lowered from 0.08%, in 1996 to now in 0.05%, there's no proof that us lowering it now to 0% will make any impact. So I think there's a lot of this. There is the muffin story, there's the banana, there's the cough mixture. But for us, I think, as I said, it's not about that. It's not about the 0%. It's about, is that going to make a difference? And the evidence is showing that it may not make the difference. So if there's not much difference that will be made, what then is going to make the difference? And that is what we choose to focus on. We choose to making the difference where we know a difference is being made, like the AECs, et cetera. So for us, whether it is 0%, 0.02%, it's not going to hurt our business because people consume alcohol anyway, and that's the reality. And I'm sorry to go off track a bit, but we've seen that during COVID. People found alcohol to drink. Unfortunately, it's a societal issue. People drink, and people will drink alcohol. So for us, it's not a concern. What we're concerned about is people drinking and driving. Social harm is the issue, and we do not want people drinking and driving, and that's our focus. So for us, the road limitation is, that is a technical issue that must be dealt with by the people who are the experts in this. They can do the scientific calculations of what's the right limits, etc. And that's not something we want to debate. So I hope that answers that question. So we really leave it up to you. It can stay the same. In terms of our, I know there was a question earlier, and I know it's not being asked to us, but I do think it's important to say this, is that there was a question in terms of our non-alcoholic beverages and alcohol-free. So there is a difference between those. And when it's de-alcoholized, there may be a trace. So yes, there is a concern for the industry on that. But we actually want the message to go out clearly. There should be none for the road. No, do not get behind that wheel if you feel you're intoxicated and unable to drive that vehicle. So that's a very important message. So it's not a simple answer. I'm sorry, I'm not giving you the right answers maybe that you want, but that is a very clear message that needs to go out. In terms of the funding, what the industry has done is that we have, in terms of our harm reduction, set up the organization called aware.org that my colleague Pamela has spoken about. And aware.org is funded by the industry in terms of our harm reduction program. And it is an independent NGO that we contribute to that. So we have not been receiving any government funding, and we continue to run these programs from the industry's viewpoint. We partner with government in terms of these programs. So in terms of the honorable members' comments in terms of whether we will come to government, I think there's always room for partnerships, et cetera. But I do think that it is very important that industry play their role, and this is where we bring in our funding to that. In terms of my fellow colleagues, I'm not sure if Pravashni and Pamela, in terms of those two questions, have anything to add. I'll hand over to Pravashni first. Thank you.
Sure. I think for me, the first point I would like to make, and this is over and above the submission we've made, is, you know, we're trying to control an ill that has a significant impact on society. But what we're doing with 0% BAC is actually, You're criminalizing people who have a drink or half a drink, etc. And you're overwhelming the criminal justice system, where the police have to put a lot of effort into, you know, chasing after this person who just had a little drink. I would rather we have a discussion as society, you know, the whole of society. The WHO also talks about a whole of society approach. How do we fix this problem together in a more holistic manner? And that is why in the part of the deck that I spoke to is the detail around what exactly is the challenge, how big is that challenge, and then how then should we target our responses. There is a challenge around, there are some people who drink and drive, there are some people who drink far more than they should, and then continue to get behind the wheel. Let's deal with those characters, very targeted, get them behind bars, get them arrested for their behavior, etc. But I think what is important for us as an oil of society approach in South Africa is that we get to the heart of some of these issues as we design solutions going forward. And that is what we've tried to do with our AWARE programs. We've looked at what is the behavior we're trying to fix, and we've put a lot of money and investment and thinking into how do we fix that challenge that society is facing. And we want to partner with government. We've reached out to the Department of Transport, to the Department of Social Development, etc., on various issues in the harm space, especially on transport issues. And we're still willing to go further with our government departments, because it's in all our best interests that this is fixed. And I know there was a comment made that, you know, we hear and we, you know, it's about profits, etc. But it doesn't benefit us as an industry when we have a society that is hurting itself. And so we too are committed, like government, to fixing some of these challenges. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. If I could just add on the alcohol evidence centers and the industry funding. So I think the important point outside of the industry making all of the investments and the funding was also to get to rural areas. And that is where we seek that public-private partnership in order to help us. If we want this to be holistic and evidence-based, we need the evidence, we need the research. And that element sits with the relevant government departments. So we earnestly seek, outside of the huge investments that the industry is making, we earnestly seek the public-private partnership. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not sure if there are any more questions, but I think if not, then I'd like to end by thanking the committee for this opportunity once again to come and present. And I'd like to emphasize what Pamela said. We need some public-private partnerships. This is a whole of society approach to tackle a problem in society. And we are willing participants in that process, and we look forward to working with the department. Thank you, Chair. Chair, you're on mute.
Thank you very much for your presentation, detailed presentation. We will definitely take into consideration what you are saying, and we want to appreciate the efforts you are taking to help the society, help government to deal with real issues that are affecting the society. I think that should be appreciated upfront. And as I've said, thank you very much for having prepared yourself for this beautiful submission. Should you wish to be released, I think you are now released. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you, sir. Can we move on and have a submission by Westcrow? I can see Vinpro is back. Do we have those two companies? Westcrow, Vinpro, are you here?
Good morning, Chairperson. Yes, our representatives are here, and we can start with our presentation, sir.
You are welcome to this meeting today. Thank you for making time. I can see you are energetic. You're ready to give us your presentation. Why not? Forge ahead. The platform is yours.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to present our submission in response to the National Road Traffic Bill today. Share my slides with you. There we go.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. So we want to start by saying that we fully support a zero tolerance approach to drunk driving. In our presentation, we want to address the proposed reduction in the legal BAC limit from 0.05% to 0%. We would like to give you an overview of the wine tourism industry in South Africa, and we would like to question whether this is the zero back limit is the correct policy tool to address the problem, and whether it will not have a disproportionately negative impact on the wine tourism sector, which has already been very hard hit by COVID-19 and the bans on the domestic sale of alcohol. I'm Marissa Nieboot. I'm the wine tourism manager of Vinpro. We are the Wine Industry Association, and we represent 533 wine cellars located along our country's 23 wine routes. I'm joined here today by my colleagues Karen Bosman, who is the Strategic Research and Public Affairs Head at Westgrow, my colleague Cornelis van der Waal, who's the Chief Research Officer at Westgrow. We have Almarie Rabi joining us. She's the chairperson of the South African Wine Routes Forum. Westgrow is an organization that I'm sure you're very familiar with. They're the official tourism, trade and investment promotion agency for Cape Town and the Western Cape. And the South African Wine Routes Forum is a non-profit association established to develop wine tourism in South Africa and to represent our industry members' interests. We're also joined by our colleague Rosemary Anderson, who is the national chairperson of the Federated Hospitality Association of Southern Africa, or FEDASA in short. Tourists travel to visit our wineries along the country's wine routes, many of which are in rural areas, to do cellar tastings, vineyard tours, they do wine tastings, they eat at our restaurants, and they buy wine to take home with them. Often they stay over on the farm or in the local area, which is significant for the local economy. South African wine industry, which has been mentioned here today, sir, is the 10th largest producer of wines in the world, and the wine industry at large contributes 49 billion to GDP each year. Given in mind how tourists experience our offering, we therefore define wine tourism as travel to wineries and wine regions for the purpose of enjoying our food, our wine, our hospitality, the activities that we have on offer, our scenery, the culture, and local South African lifestyles, all while fostering sustainable economic development in our communities. Wine tourism in South Africa contributed 7.2 billion rand to GDP in 2019, and during the same year, between 8,464 people were employed at farm gate during low season, and during our high season, that number moves up to 10,223. Job opportunities created. Indirectly, the sector supports 36,000 jobs in the South African economy. As you can see on this slide, our cellar doors or our tasting rooms are still by far our most common tourism facility or service that we offer. And if you look at the pie chart, it will also show you that nearly a third of our revenue, our tourism revenue, is coming from wine sales and wine tastings that takes place at our tasting rooms. In general, wine tourism contributes 15% to the total turnover of our wineries. When we look at our smaller wine cellars, that number changes drastically. For wine cellars with an annual turnover of less than 10 million rand, that number moves over to 41% of their total turnover being dependent on wine tourism. Thousands of local and international visitors travel to our wineries each year, which creates significant revenue for our economies, as I've said. It's a unique world-class asset that South Africa has, which helps to build and maintain a strong brand reputation for our country. The slide that I'm showing you now is research that South African Tourism conducted in the UK, where they asked Britons what was their top holiday associations with South Africa. And as you can see, a wine tourism holiday ended up fourth ahead of beaches and sunbathing, which has traditionally been a stronghold in the British market for us. Along with our submission, we submitted a document that showed the BAC levels of the wine producing countries across the world to benchmark South Africa's figures against. The map that I'm showing you now is of the great wine capitals. It is 11 cities and 11 wine regions across the world that have been recognized as being excellent in offering wine tourism. For all of these cities and all of these regions, their BAC level is currently consistent with our countries. It's at 0.05%, with the exception of Chile's, which is at 0.03%. At this point, I would like to hand over to my colleague Almarie Rabi from the South African Wine Roots Forum to talk more about the wine tourism landscape.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity for us to share our views and case. So the South African Wine Roots Forum, as Marissa has noted earlier, represents about 23 wine roots, which has members across three provinces. And you will see here from the map that the Western Cape, outside of the main centers of, for example, Cape Town, Stellenbosch, Franschhoek area, is actually quite widespread, and the majority of wine roots are situated outside of the let's call it Cape Metropole. So the South African wine tourism and fine wine industry is globally recognized and highly respected. So we get a lot of people who travel here for wine tourism, wine holidays, or wine related activities. And because of the way that wineries are built and how these experiences are put together, we make we really need these wine tourists and wine visits to the cellar doors, because the majority of our wine are sold through these experiences and directly from the cellar. Then, as we know, and this has been referred to previously by some of the other presenters, is that the wine industry is different to the liquor industry per se. We were allowed very kindly to trade 7 days per week to keep the whole wine tourism chain going when it was permitted to sell or to welcome guests back to the cellar doors. And with the exception of craft breweries, wine farms and wine destinations are heavily reliant on these activities and these visits to our cellar doors. Thank you, Marissa. When we talk about a zero BIC limit for drivers, this will severely impact and disproportionately impact the smaller wine regions. You will see here on the map the reach of the Uber network. So you will see that it covers obviously Cape Town, Stellenbosch, Franschhoek, which are the more mature wine routes. But then we sort of lose Swartland, the Karoo, the Namakwa West Coast, and Botrever. They will really struggle with e-hailing, with other chauffeur services like Goodfellas or Take Me Home or any one of these Scooter Angels, any one of these services that will assist consumers of alcohol to drive or to be taken home in a safe manner. Due to the tourism development levels, some of the wine routes are more reliant on wine tasting. Like we've said before, and Marissa has alluded to before, is that the Swartland depends 78% of the wine tourism offerings are also what drives the economy. Hermanus has got about 80% of their tourism activities is wine tourism related, and Booster is about 61% of their activities in the economy is wine tourism related. They depend heavily on visitors to their tasting rooms and people buying and tasting wine there. So as we've said before, the zero VOC limit will adversely impact the rural areas, especially where they rely heavily on tourism and revenue generation at winery level. And as my colleague Dani Cornier also mentioned earlier, as a deterrent for international tourists who come to South Africa, the self-drive economy is one of the largest motivations for them. So they drive around and experience eating meals, having a glass of wine. And by reducing the levels to 0.00, it just means that these people are being made, or they're being criminalized. And this is very detrimental to especially the rural economy. The proposed reduction or restrictions also pose a significant risk to the continued efforts of the wine industry to ensure that labor forces continue to respective regions, rural economies, as we know that the wine industry supports a very wide circular economy. It's not only the people directly working on the farms, but when you look especially at rural areas, it's also affecting the restaurants, the local hotels, and all other experiences, because wine tourism is the main driver of these regions, and by restricting it or by making it difficult for people to travel around or to move around and explore, it just affects the whole industry. And we've seen that during the recent alcohol bans and lockdown. I mean, even in the Stellenbosch economy died down completely when people couldn't go out and enjoy a glass of wine with a meal. And that really, I mean, if Stellenbosch gets shut down, then I don't want to know what it looks like in the rural areas. Then I would like to, I can't stress enough the adverse effect that it will have on the rural economy, especially in the Western Cape, where wine tourism and the wine industry, agriculture are the main drivers of tourism. So this is something that we are really concerned about and would like to request that the 0.05 blood level is maintained and it's not being moved down to 0.0. And then finally, my last slide and my last presentation is that our tasting rooms, as you are aware, are already legislated. It's already, they're all legal, they've all got liquor licenses, and those legal measures already govern us and guide us as to what is allowed and what is not. I would say standard operating procedures in tasting rooms that we are already following are things like measured tasting portions. So for example, it's a 50 milliliter portion. There's usually access to biscuits or other dry things, access to food close by. Yes, it's paid for, but the opportunity is there to have food with your glass of wine. Then there's also the use of spittoons and the availability and encouragement to drink water during a wine tasting. And I think that is it. So, and then we've got, obviously, sorry, apologies, the industry affiliation with aware.org and the communication and safe trading commitment from the wine industry as a whole to support those incredible initiatives by aware.org and other industry bodies. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, two ladies.
Thank you, sir. Could I introduce my colleague, Karen Bosman, at this stage? She will share her own slides from Westgrow.
for as long as you are within your time. I'm sure you're not trying to squeeze my hand.
No.
Okay. Quickly, let's allow that process.
Good morning. I just want to check if you can see my screen. Okay. Good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present along with our colleague. We are also just speaking to this morning about the specific clause that deals with the zero alcohol tolerance, apologies. So WESCO is the Tourism, Trade and Investment Promotion Agency for Cape Town and the Western Cape. And in this capacity, we support the development of a well-regulated wine tourism industry. The main question that we just want to put to the portfolio committee is just that whether this specific measure is the right one to achieve the stated objective. So the stated objective has been to enhance road traffic safety. And the chosen measure here is the reduction of the blood alcohol content to zero. And we are not, as you've heard from many people this morning, there is no dispute that alcohol plays a major role in road traffic injuries and deaths. But there is, just from what I've seen this morning, there isn't really agreement as to the fact that this blood alcohol content limit is really the problem, and that it is necessarily the right regulatory measure to go to target here, rather than more targeted interventions in various problem areas where it is evidence-based. So in thinking of this, you know, is this the right measure? And then in thinking of what is at risk if it's not the right measure, if it's not going to really achieve its objective, and if you are putting a whole economy at risk at the same time, then we would just really ask the portfolio committee to think this through in terms of what really is at risk. And what is at risk is really your jobs in the rural economy. And wine tourism has a very unique way in which it can attract not only local tourists to rural areas, but also international tourists. And what that means is international money. It's almost an export. It's, you know, you're bringing foreign earnings into rural areas who usually don't have this opportunity. And if you introduce a zero back limit here, it's really going to hamper how this industry operates. The industry doesn't operate outside the rules, operates within the rules. And so the question just really is affecting this rural economy really, apologies, my presentation has a mind of its own. Is it really worth it? And so the consequence here is really a disproportionately negative impact on wine tourism and the rural economy. You want your regulations to be proportionate, and we understand that there's an objective, but we just really want to caution the fact that this is not necessarily the silver bullet. And if it, you know, with a silver bullet, apologies, what is it that you are, you know, impacting in its wake? And so the big question really is the proportionality. You know, is this measure going to achieve the objective? Is it not going to burden small businesses too much? If there is a way to achieve this objective in a way that doesn't burden small businesses and the rural economy, should smart regulation not take into account to rather follow those approaches. The fact that our blood alcohol content is the same level as our international wine producing, as other countries internationally, shows that, you know, maybe blood alcohol content isn't actually the problem here. We have a disproportionate level of road accident fatalities, yes, but is blood alcohol level actually the issue? And we think that with effective enforcement of the current rules and with a whole more integrated approach to having very specific targeted policies that target problem areas. We've heard a lot about pedestrians. We've heard a lot about potentially novice drivers. And we just think that there's a disproportionality here and that the committee just needs to take into account the very important role that wine tourism plays, especially in the rural communities. And with that, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Karen Bosman. And Marisa Nivo.
Yes.
And then Elmarie Rabi. For your beautiful presentation. We have heard you. Let me just check that the members would not be wanting to interact with these beautiful ladies. Honorable Mapena is the first one. Is there any other honorable member who really want to interact with the presentation? Okay, let's take Honorable Mapena. Masibonga Mhlonishwa sithokoze. Shayise ngisimanje.
No, ngithokoze khulu sihlalo, ngithokoze ithuba engilithola kuwe. Ngilotshise nengikhambela inithekeli zethu ezisekomidini. Ngisho ukuthi siyazamukela. Kuhle kuhle bengifuna uyiraga ngesikhethu kodwana ngoba you are a chairperson. Ngizayiraga ngelimi lemzini, akunankinga. Yes, welcome to colleagues. I see that you guys are shooting straight to the point. You're not wasting time. You have a specific interest. Obviously, you are representing about 2,500 wine farmers across the Western Cape and in Cape Town. And your only issue with the current legislation that is up for review is the blood alcohol content, and which you are making a motivation that it should be maintained at where it is today. And we are also citing the recent pandemic where the wine industry was allowed to operate, but albeit with some limitations at some point during the different alert levels. And I think of late you were given space for you guys to trade. But I think it is true and correct that the wine industry and specifically in terms of tourism and wine tasting and everything else represent a quite a big chunk of contribution within our economy, and especially with tourism, if you look at it, and it contributes significantly towards the revenue, especially within the Western Cape and Cape Town. And I think, look, we agree that yes, alcohol does is a contributing factor to a lot of accidents which are there on our roads. However, I think the issue is also the law enforcement which is there. And at the moment, the challenges we're having is actually with the light-handedness of our law enforcement agencies. But I just want to say, as my comment, I fully support what you are saying, and I fully support the proposal that we keep and maintain the blood alcohol content where it is today, looking at the and how having a 0.0% BAC will affect potentially the tourism industry in Cape Town and in the Western Cape. I think even though we are representing the Western Cape, but I feel that it might be a universal, we are representing in the main many of the wine farmers which are there, but obviously with the biggest concentration being in the Western Cape, where a lot of this is happening. But yes, Jefferson, significantly, I just want to say I support what they are saying, and we are with them. Obviously, they're coming from the best-run city in South Africa and the best well-run province in the whole of South Africa. Obviously, they're making sense. We support them fully.
Thank you.
It's 12 hours.
Mhlonishwa noma urake ngelimi lasemzini. Asithokoze. Sithokoze mhlonishwa. Do you want to say something, ladies, before I thank you?
Mr. Chairperson, we have our colleague Rosemary Anderson in the audience as well, who is presenting with us. And if you can afford us 2 more minutes, if I can twist your arm for 2 more minutes for her to give you the input of the wider hospitality industry. Wine tourism is very much interlinked with broader tourism and hospitality. Our wineries rely on restaurants for wine sales. Our restaurants rely on wine sales for a lot of their profit. So I have my colleague Rosemary in the audience, and I see that Chief Chivenga from the TBCSA has also raised his hand to comment, sir.
I actually stay away from allowing people from the audience. Otherwise, I would have allowed you to twist my hand. I think it would have been a very soft twist. But because I've laid a precedence that I do not allow people from the audience, lest I'm viewed as inconsistent, then please bear with me, Marisa. Unless you guys have anything to say, I am willing to release.
Sorry, excuse me. So I can sneak in just sort of on behalf of the hospitality industry. And just to reaffirm what Marisa said, and this is obviously true for the greater hospitality industry, but also especially for the rural areas, is that wine/wine tourism, restaurants and accommodation is heavily interlinked and entwined, and we really rely on each other as a supply chain. Obviously the restaurant and hospitality or hotel industry also relies or is a provider of jobs, and we're really looking at the whole economic value chain here, or the economic chains and the opportunities that is brought. So from the wine tourism sector and from all the wine farms in the Western Cape, it's very important for us to strengthen our relationships and to protect these relationships and protect to break the opportunities on behalf of them. And as the Honourable Chairman earlier said, let's continue to save lives by providing economic dignity, save jobs and save our businesses. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, ladies. That was Elmari Rabe. Karen, you have anything to say?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to check the chat. I believe Mrs. Anderson is part of our panel today. Is she, in that sense, allowed to speak for 2 minutes? Or have we?
That message came from me.
So I think there was a misunderstanding that she's in the audience.
Okay. Who? Let me check.
Ms. Anderson.
Yeah. Chair, I'll be quick if I can, please.
Valerie.
Thank you. Chair, my name is Rosemary Anderson, and I'm the National Chairperson of FedHASA, which is the Federated Hospitality Association of South Africa. We are the recognized industry spokesperson for any business that sells food and beverages or beverages and provides accommodation in South Africa. So hospitality and tourism in South Africa could be the silver bullet our country has been looking for to bring our country out of the recession we're in and create millions of more jobs. If we can only attract a significant more number of international tourists to South Africa than we have in the past, this could greatly reduce the number of unemployed in our country. And the wonderful thing about hospitality and tourism is that you don't need formal training to be great at your job. It really is our silver bullet. We don't need to invest any more money. We've got all the most natural, wonderful beauty in the world. We could be a game changer. And in order for the silver bullet to happen for our country and get us out of this recession, we need to be able to attract more foreign tourists. Local tourism just isn't enough to then make a dent in our current unemployment. But if we could double, triple, or even quadruple our international tourism, it could literally be the game changer we're looking for. And we could do that because we're more beautiful. We've got more offerings than anyone else has got. We've got it all, okay? In order to do this, we need to create an environment where international tourists want to visit us. There are a few deterrents, unfortunately, which dissuade international tourists from visiting us. One of them, unfortunately, is our violent crime. And the other one is the fear of being on the wrong side of our police services. If we introduce a zero limit, this will have a direct negative impact on attracting foreign tourism and will damage local tourism and hospitality too for the following reasons. It's common cause and it's a medical fact that alcohol can stay in one system with a breathalyzer test for up to 24 hours and a urine test up to 48 hours. This will definitely detract from the practical ease of a local international tourist holiday and the freedom of enjoying great SA wine or our lovely popular beers. Because this will mean that you'll have to schedule any alcohol consumption around if you're going to be driving behind the wheel in the next 24 hours. Does this mean that when you go out for a lovely night out with a great steak and a lovely beverage attached to it, that now you can only do so if you know you're not going to be traveling within the next 24 hours? This is what zero percentage means. Added to this, it's also a common cause and a medical fact that things like mouthwash, cough medicine, other medications can also be detected by a breathalyzer. Does this mean that you also, once you've used mouthwash in the morning, you can't drive for 24 hours just in case you might be pulled over and actually a reading given of over 0%? It's also a common cause and a medical fact that meals prepared with alcohol also show up in your system. So it could be brandy tart, it could be Christmas pudding, coca van, chicken masala, olive, cherry trifle, even lovely pepper sauces actually, and even flavoring extracts actually come up in your blood system and in your breathalyzer as having alcohol. Does this mean that tourists and South Africans will now have to check the ingredients in meals they're going to ensure that there's no alcohol in them, or otherwise not drive for 24 hours after having eaten them? Does this mean that our world-renowned chefs will not have to change the ingredients in their famous dishes they prepare? SA Tourism and other tourist organizations also tell you that international and South African citizens often fear our police. Landing up in a situation at night or any time where one is accused by police of having alcohol in one's system is something really feared by our citizens and international tourists. So this is not something we certainly don't want to add to the situation. We currently have legislation in place regarding drinking and driving. There's nothing wrong with our legislation. What is wrong with it is not implemented or policed consistently by the authorities. We need to address that, the implementation of policing it, not the legislation. Very similar legislation, 0.05% to our current rules, exist in many other countries who do not experience the same levels of drunken driving as South Africa. In fact, most of them have half of what we've got or less. So the reason for this is that they enforce it, unlike South Africa. The rules don't need to be changed, they just need to be enforced. If we change it to 0%, what would make it be enforced then? If we're not enforcing it now, why would we enforce it then?
Hello. I think humbly we come to an end in terms of time allocated to the presentation. Otherwise, we'd have wanted to hear more, but I think the point you are making is well demonstrated. the issues about the blood alcohol content, I would implore you to pause from where you are so that we can take other issues forward with the greatest of respect, ladies, if you can allow me.
Thank you.
I'm going to interject at you. It's not my will, but it's according to our program. I want to, at this point in time, really appreciate the efforts, the presentation that you have made to us. I think we now have a presentation. We want to thank you for being considerate in terms of the jobs that might be lost, the business, and also taking into consideration the safety of our people on the road, those innocent people who do not take also alcohol at all. I hear that you are also caring about them. Otherwise, let me thank you and liberate you from this meeting, should you so wish. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable members, there are three sets of minutes which I thought having a bit of time, minutes have been sent to us, the minutes of the 9th, the 10th, and the 11th. I thought we could deal with these minutes so that we don't have a lot of minutes remaining with us. I'm sure members have gone through these minutes. Can I, if we agree, deal with the minutes of the 9th, 9th of March?
Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable McD.
I propose the adoption of the minutes of the 9th of March, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. And Honorable McDonald, any seconder for the minutes of the 9th?
I second, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you to the two honorable members for the twin approach. Any matters arising from the minutes of the 9th? Going once, twice. Thank you very much. Let's deal with the minutes of the 10th, which by and large deals with the public hearings on the same bill of the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill. Any mover for the minutes of the 10th?
Honorable McDonald moves, Chair.
Honorable McDonald moves. Any seconder?
I will second, Chairperson.
Makubonga Mhlonishwa, siragela phambili. Thank you very much. Any matters arising from the minutes? Going once, twice. Thank you very much. The last set of minutes will be the minutes of the 11th of March. The minutes were also dealing with public hearings and submissions by different stakeholders. Any proposal for the minutes to be adopted?
Chairperson, I move that we adopt the minutes, Chairperson Honorable McDonald.
Thank you very much. Then let's
Chairperson, I second thank the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Miriam Ramadwa. Any matters arising?
Chairperson, I think you might go on mute.
No, I am not muted.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, thank you for checking on me. Age-wise, you are doing well, Mhlonishwa. Any matters arising from the minutes of the 11th? Thank you very much. Valerie, any announcements?
Not from our side, Chair. It's just the department and National Treasury has been invited to the meeting on Thursday evening. So we would like members to please diarize that on Thursday evening.
Thank you very much, Valerie. We are well aware. We are ready. Members should just remember that. Otherwise, let me take this opportunity to thank all the members who were able to connect, and those who did not connect, hard luck. We'll meet tomorrow, same place, same time. Long live everybody. Thank you.
Long live the chair. Long live the chair.
Thank you very much. Long live MacD and everybody.